Inside Sports Medicine with Dr. T.O. Soriao, orthopedic surgeon and medical director of Texas Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Group. Dr. Soriao's comments are meant for informational and educational purposes only and not as a treatment. His comments are not a substitute for a visit with your doctor. And now, Dr. T.O. Soriao.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Inside Sports Medicine. T.O. Soriao here, Kareem Mayer there. Episode 730 on this early January. Hopefully you weren't affected by the storms last night. And supposedly, snow flurries this morning. We'll see. That'd be fun. Lots to get to today. And I teased it on segment number one, second opinions. And by the way, if you're watching on Facebook, thank you. We you get to listen in during the break on what we chat about. So almost by the nature of my practice, I see a lot of second opinions, and they're very time consuming, and I'm very, very flattered. I really am very flattered when people come from all over the town and all over the country just for a second opinion. And often it's not second opinion. It's third, fourth, or fifth opinion. I saw a fifth opinion the other day. I was the fifth person to examine the young lady.
From a logistics standpoint, how do you even tell the – I mean, if you don't that a fifth opinion is coming in, that your clinic just came to a screeching halt.
No.
Like that has to be vetted out. Like if you go to a physician's office for the listener,
yep.
If you're there for a second, third, or fourth opinion, just let them know. Let them know because I'm not sure.
We ask because they are very time consuming. Our scheduler, at least for my patients, specifically asks if this is a second opinion. Now I will tell you this. A lot of patients won't tell you on purpose because they want your fresh advice, okay? So they don't tell you, hey, by the way, I've seen three other people, and mm-hmm. this is what they said. And that's what makes the visit even longer.
Yeah.
So I see them, we're doing this, and then they say, well, you know, I saw Dr. Jones last week, and Dr. Jones said this, 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 and this. What do you think?
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan of second opinions, but by definition, I do them. And, you know, if it's a second opinion for a pro athlete, I charge a lot of money for it because it is very time consuming. But that said, every once in a while, I send a patient out for a second opinion, especially if it's something that I don't do. So this was an example of she's been a patient for 20 years and she had a complex foot and ankle problem, something that I don't do. And I sent her out. So she comes in 2 or 3 months later with her son, who's got a problem that I just operated on, and she's in a boot, and how did things go? I had the surgery. And by the way, I can't stand Dr. Blank. Well, if you can't stand Dr. Blank, why'd you let him do the surgery? Well, you know, you sent me to him. You obviously have a lot of confidence, blah, blah. I was caught in the middle between sending her to who I thought was the most competent, and their personalities clashed. Apparently, they exchanged words. There were cussing involved, So I've never seen Dr. X as a patient. I've never been in his office. I don't know how things run. So I can get that. You know, not everybody does it the way we do it at Texas Sports Medicine. But this was a case of and a little bit of experience, talking here. I rarely just give one name. I will always give two or three names. You know what? If for this particular problem, I would do this, this, and this. I would go here, here, and here. I usually give at least two names so that they have choices. Well, in this one particular case, she absolutely hated this guy, and I have guilt. I harbor guilt because I'm the one that sent. Have you had experiences like
Same thing. I had a really bad Lisfranc injury.
Foot.
That needed to get revised. Bad foot injury, right? And I knew it needed to get a revision, and I gave, like you, a couple names that you guys had given me. I didn't personally know this physician, but know of them, know their work, know where they trained, and know through the community does good work.
Right.
She came back after the second opinion, said he agreed with you, but I don't like the guy. I don't like the office. I'm not going back.
Yep.
And I'm thinking,
now what? Now what am I going to do
with you? If he agreed with me and we're managing non-surgical, great. I can take care of it from here.
Right.
But then I was like, well, do you keep sending them to somebody?
I have the same thought.
So if they do good work and you know if the work has to be done, it's going to be done well, regardless if they're, you know, talking to a wall or somebody you can't communicate with or the office is horrible, but the work will be good. What do you do about that? I mean,
I'll tell you what I do, because now that I know,
do you preface it? Do you tell them?
You do.
You're not going to like them. Well, they're not going to be nice. You may not get a lot of conversation with them.
So
but
I do,
if you need surgery, it'll be good.
So I do that. I do that with several of my regular second opinions. And one comment that I prepare patients for is how the office runs. Hey, look. Their office does not run like our office. So, you know, we're pretty much on time. You know, it may not be surprising that, you know, you're an hour late seeing the doctor. If you call Texas Sports Medicine, you're going to get a live person. And there you might get a recording with five options, you know. So be prepared that the practice doesn't run like our practice. However, he does really good work, and if I needed to have my ankle fused, that's where I would go.
You know, and I think some patients almost understand that when they see the physician, they know there are so many layers before they get to the doc, and the doc may not be able to take care of every layer if they have a bigger maybe practice or other people involved. You know, we try and run a pretty tight ship knowing everything that goes on, but, you know, I got friends that are in big practices, and I mean, there's a lot of things that just way out of their control. And so by the time it gets to them, they may have no clue, right? They may have no idea what the experience that the patient had getting to them, but the patient knows, look, that's the person I need to see. I'm going to do what I need to do to get my problem taken care of.
And the other area that I try to warn my patients, and this is kind of a feel. So I have a few second opinion physicians on my rotation that are a little gruff. They don't have the best bedside manner. You know, they have a great international reputation in their field, but they're not necessarily the nicest people. They don't give you the warm and fuzzy. And so I tell them that. I said, look, I would go to Dr. B, but, you know, be prepared that, you know, he's it's not the warm and fuzzy kind of guy. He's just going to tell you, well, you know, whatever. So it's this whole world of second opinions.
Yeah, like with us being in the know and rotating and working with different, you know, as a resident, not, you know, when you're in practice, you're not operating with a lot of other surgeons. But as you're kind of, you know, in training and fellowship, there are certain physicians that I agree with you that personality-wise, like, I don't want to hang out with.
Right.
But if there's a problem with me, I would absolutely let that person operate on me any day of the week.
I agree 100%.
So that, but people wouldn't know that, you know?
So I told you the story, two or three weeks ago with my friend who's a physician who had to have an abdominal procedure. And he called on Friday saying, hey, I had surgery on Wednesday and I'm running a fever. Did not get a call back until the following Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, that's
running
crazy.
A fever.
That's did crazy. Not
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And when he finally did get the call back, it was from the secretary scheduling an appointment to be seen for the fever.
Yeah.
So again, I try to warn people, and I guarantee you he's going to warn everybody on the planet, that some offices just are not very efficient when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Let's go to Rhett. Hey, Rhett, good morning. What's up?
Hey, good morning, doctors. How are you?
Great.
Good morning.
Good. Hey, I just had a question in terms of ACL surgery. So if you choose not to go and have that repaired, what does that kind of look like? I know you said a couple times it's not really a pain injury. So if you don't repair, do you just have instability? Maybe just when you're, I don't know, if you're cutting or doing something, or kind of like, what does that look like for the rest of your life?
Yeah, Red, I'm going to jump in on this. Dr. Mayer here. This is the exact story that I operated on yesterday. I had a 33-year-old guy who, when he was 18, end of his senior year, tore his ACL. For whatever reason, didn't want to fix it. So he lived his whole life from 18 to now 33. Regular job now, works, has a kid, wants to run around, and just says, man, it just, I don't trust this thing. I'm tired of it. It's bothering me. And so I said, would anything else ever happen to you in those, you know, time from 18 to 33 years old? No other injuries, nothing. It's just been loose and moving around. Do you have pain? No pain. Anything else? No, just, I just don't trust it. It keeps giving out. His knee looked like trash when I operated on it yesterday. The instability of not having an ACL and just the chronic back and forth, the motion, the increasing stress on the cartilage, the increasing stress on the meniscus, over time, that an unstable joint is going to start breaking down. And that's what I saw yesterday. You know, guy had no pain, but you're looking at his knee, you're like, how did this not hurt this guy? And all he had was instability. And so that's the long-term 15, 20 years not living with a stable joint. And that's true for almost any joint in the body, to be honest with you. That's not like, oh, because it's ACL specific. No, that's a kind of a common theme anywhere. You have very loose ankle, bunch of ankle ligaments you tore up, never really got fixed, chronic ankle instability. Those guys, 15, 20 years down the road, can develop some ankle arthritis and wear and tear. So that's kind of the long-term natural history. Does every single person get that? No, but biomechanically, and when we look at it in the lab and all that stuff and some of the studies, it is that's the natural history.
Yeah, so Rhett, I'm gonna add just a little bit to that because he basically covered it. I think he answered your question. So you're right. You've heard me say this before. ACL injuries are not pain injuries. They're stability problems. And yes, they hurt initially because that's when the nerves tear. That's when the blood accumulates. That's when there are other structures in the knee that are damaged at the time that you tear your ACL. But within 2 or 3 weeks, the acute symptoms subside. And in some patients, they think, well, I'm healed. I'm over it. I'm okay. I can jog. Well, the problem is the ACL does not reattach. So once it's torn, and you're unstable forever and ever and ever. Not every patient is going to experience instability every day. But enough patients will, that the risk of the chronic instability will lead to premature arthritis. Mayer is absolutely right. This is well proven, not only in the lab, but in the literature in third world countries, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't have if you don't have your ACL fixed, ultimately, eventually, you're going to have some arthritic changes. Now, that will lead to pain. So to answer your question, if you don't have your ACL fixed, your risk of joint damage increases. I'm going to say this, and this is what I tell my patients. Even if we fix your ACL, even if we give you a brand new ACL and your knee is now stable, you still have a higher risk of arthritis in that knee than it was before the injury. But to improve your chances, stabilize the knee, especially if you're young and active. If you're my age and I tore my ACL in Aspen last week, I may very well not have it fixed because by the time I'm arthritic, I may be 90. So, but for a young, active, athletic individual, the standard of care is to fix the darn thing.
Okay. Thank you guys very much. It's very, very informative, good information to have.
All right. Good luck with it.
Thanks.
Quick little break. Inside Sports Medicine. We're going to talk a little bit about the NFL draft. What? Yeah, we're going to talk about the NFL draft. Inside Sports Medicine. Soriel coming right back.